to Chinese TV. Inspiring people across the planet to be a little kinder and a little more gentle with each other. Delivering inspirational TV, one story at a time, from my lounge to yours. I'm your host, Tony Lontis. And hello, everyone. Good morning, Al. I have the wonderful Al Bojica on the show with me today, and you're listening to Radio Tony Everyday Business with Tony Lontis. And before I introduce you to my wonderful young guest, I need to tell you a little bit about her. So she was born in New Britain, Connecticut, and raised in Southington, Connecticut. She's an only child, and when she was younger, she was very athletic and into lots of sports. During high school, she became a godmother, and that had positive effect on her life in that she realized that she was now responsible for someone other than herself. She had some real struggles through high school with some big back surgeries, and that resulted in a spinal fusion where her back was held together by rods and screws. And in high school, she was lucky enough to start with her missionary work, and she began going on trips to Haiti, where she would stay at an orphanage, take care of the children, make home visits around the village, and visit sick and elderly. She also helped raise money to make sure the village had the things that they needed. She started leading her own trips to Haiti during summer. And her work has continued and does continue today. She went on to go to college and do an economics and business communications degree. She also has the interesting job of drag racing on the weekend. And I was asked to have Al on my program by someone who does a lot of work in Haiti. So welcome to Radio Tony, Al. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. It's been really cold this morning and I feel like my hands are still ice blocks, even though I've had them warming up and I've got Ugg boots on my feet. And it's summer for you over there, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Actually, today we had a temp of 105, so quite warm over on this end.
So that's kind of in the 30s, isn't it? If I can do the translation correctly in my brain. So
yeah,
they're quite hot. So what are you doing in summer that's enjoyable for you? We're going to talk about your drag racing later, but what have you got on your plate at the moment?
Well, I am drag racing. I actually just flew back in last night to Florida. I had a race this weekend up in New Hampshire. And I spend a lot of time at my pool, but I'm always working. I work a lot. So luckily I do work from my phone. I'm able to do that. So, I can hang out by the pool and do that.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a big walker. I like to walk like 7 miles.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of your work, can you tell our listeners what you do and how you help people?
Of course. So my main job, I am a wealth management advisor. So I do all financial planning for both, individuals personally and businesses. It's a very interesting line of work. When people hear it, there's a lot of assumptive ideas as to what we do, but it's a lot of planning for retirement, long-term care, new children. It's not just for that, one area of people that one may assume it's for. I really cover all of the bases as to who we help. So I have a lot of fun, believe it or not, doing that. And I also am what we call a shampoo dealer. And the evenings after I finished my finance work, I partnered with a vegan hair and skincare company, and I help people find more natural ways to enhance their hair and skin.
Well done. So just going back to your financial work, so you work from home, so you have your own business, or do you work for someone and still work from home?
I am partnered with Northwestern Mutual. That's who I work
Yes.
with. And
Yeah.
yes, so I work there, and we have an office and everything, but if you're in the
Yes.
office, you're not meeting with people. So I'm also on the road a lot, working from home due to everything going on in this world right now with COVID. A lot of
Yes.
things have been, conformed to just using Zoom and stuff like that. But yeah, if I have a
Yes.
signal, I can work.
Yes. And so, in terms of how is Florida faring in the virus at the moment?
At the moment, as of yesterday, actually, our numbers have gone back up. And I just flew back in yesterday, like I said, from Connecticut. So it's a little bit,
Yes.
weird timing, if you will. But
Yes.
most of our, orders in terms of going out to dinner, wearing masks and everything were lifted. But now they're being
Yes.
put back into place because the numbers are rising again. So
Yeah.
it's a roller coaster.
It is. So, Al, you're still allowed to fly between states, aren't you?
Yes, so before I went this past weekend, about a month and a half ago, I went home to see my family in Connecticut,
Yeah.
and we had to quarantine here in Florida, coming back from the
Yeah.
tri-state area, which is New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut.
Yep.
So
Yes.
I was
Yes,
flying to
understandably.
Connecticut to see my family, and then I flew back here and quarantined. And then as of yesterday, right after my trip, now if you fly to Connecticut from Florida, then you have to
Yes.
quarantine there. So it's kind of reversed because they're on
Oh.
opposing sides of the rising scale.
Yeah. It certainly has changed the way that we think about travel and where we're going to go and who we visit because of the virus. So in Australia, we are still in varying stages of lockdown, and many of our states have closed their borders. So I'm in Queensland, and our borders are effectively closed, and they're also closed to international travel apart from Australians returning home. And I guess that puts us in a bit of a better state in terms of COVID, because we're a big island, so we were able to close our borders and states down. But it's a bit different in the US, where it's way more difficult for you guys to close down your borders and stop travel. So we haven't even got very much in terms of interstate travel for us at the moment. Some states are considering opening up their borders, but yeah. So if you go and see your parents in Connecticut, that's okay. But when you come back into Florida, you've got to be quarantined, yeah?
Correct.
No.
It's crazy.
So, that's manageable in terms of your work, because your work is predominantly in Florida. How's that going to work for your drag racing? Because you've got to fly to compete.
Correct. So when I'm flying out to the different states that I'm
Yeah.
racing in, it's okay. I
Yeah.
can fly into other states that are not Connecticut. They're basically flagging people from Connecticut, New York, and Jersey, like I said.
I
So if
see.
I fly into surrounding states, say Boston or Providence, I can just,
Yes.
wiggle my way into Connecticut. But as long as I'm
Yeah.
following these guidelines and then quarantining when I
Yeah.
get back to Florida.
Yeah. Okay, so in terms of your drag racing, how did you get into drag racing, and how old were you when you started?
I have not been doing it since I was super young, which is what a lot of people who are my age, 25, a lot of
Yes.
them start when they're small. So you can actually start drag racing in a class called Junior Dragsters when you're 6. And yeah, very young.
Wow, that's tiny, Al.
No kidding. They're little peanuts just driving
Yeah.
dragsters. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
cute though. And you know,
Yeah.
they haul for a 6-year-old. They go like 40 miles an hour. It's really cute. But I
Pretty fast for a
actually
6-year-old.
it is. I started drag racing when I was 22.
Yeah.
21, 22. So my
Uh-huh.
dad, the backstory behind it is that my dad
Yes.
was drag racing since 1982. And he started drag
I
racing
see.
because he went to a drag strip with one of his friends and he fell in love
Yeah.
and he started writing letters to big drag racers. Can I drive for you?
Uh-huh.
Can I drive for you? Something clicked and
Yes.
his drag racing career, you know, started there. And
Yeah.
he got a bunch of his boys to be on his team and they're his crew. And
Yeah.
then he stopped drag racing for a while because he began a new business. So he did that until about, I would say, 2012, maybe.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
then he got back into racing. And, you know, I've watched racing, I've gone to races before,
Yeah.
but I've never really been behind the scenes. So my
Yeah.
mom and I took a trip to watch one of his races. And I didn't really
Yeah.
have any expectations going in. I was just going to, you know, hang out with my mom and dad and have a good time.
Watch that.
And
Yeah.
I fell like absolutely in love with it. So that season,
Oh, wow.
4 seasons ago now, I went and I was just totally in awe of everything going on at the track, the people, the cars, the smells. It
Yes.
was just amazing. So I decided that I wanted to do it too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of toyed around the idea with my parents a little bit and they weren't really having it so much, I
Yes.
would say, but I'm a
Yeah.
pretty strong-willed person, so I hooked
Yeah.
up with one of my dad's friends actually and got my license through him. But my
Yes.
dad was there when I got licensed and he was super supportive
Yeah.
regardless. But now, you know, fast forward 3 years later,
Yeah.
it's so fun. We do it together
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
He's great. I mean, he's been doing it forever and it's cool to learn from him. And he
Yeah.
actually still has the same crew that he had back in the 80s, his
Oh,
best friends from
wow.
high school.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So that's how I got into it.
Yeah, so I'm guessing from a parent perspective, they were probably a bit worried about your safety. Do you ever feel unsafe, Al, when you drag racing?
No. I don't feel safe. So my dad always tells me, right, if you do anything, that you'll be safe if you do it the
Yes.
right way.
Yeah.
So we're very safe in terms of safety precautions, whether it
Yeah.
be the neck brace or strapping,
Yes.
you know, your team strapping you
Yes.
into the car. And just in the pits, it's a crazy place. You're dealing with nitrous
Yes.
oxide and fast car, so you have to really be smart. But I have great people around me at the track, whether I'm racing or I'm on my dad's crew, and everyone looks out for each
Yes.
other. And you don't get in the car if you don't know what you're doing, so you just have to be very
Yeah.
mentally aware of what's going on around you and what your next move is going to be. And personally, I pray to the man upstairs so I know he has my
Yeah.
back when I go down the track and it goes well.
Yeah. Do you understanding that you've got that past history of the problems with your spine, do you have any issues getting in and out of the car? Because they're kind of low to the ground, and how does your back handle that side of it?
It's really easy actually. So
Good.
there's no door. You don't have to bend
Yeah,
down or
yeah.
anything. You're right. They are very low to the ground. But you actually swing a leg over. It's almost like getting on the horse in terms of getting in the car.
Yes.
And then, you know, you just stand up and swing your legs out. But I was a very avid softball and basketball player in high school. I
Yeah.
had basketball state championship. I was getting looked at by colleges for softball, and that's what I was going to do. So I've always been very competitive, but obviously after my back incident, I wasn't able to play those sports anymore. So with drag racing, I can still be super competitive, but there's not that, you know, being around with people and that contact. It's, you know, there's G-force and everything, and you're working on the car, but you're also strapped in very tight. You're sitting upright. So, you know, there are some Monday mornings after a racing weekend where I can feel it a little bit in my back, but compared to the sports that I'm used to playing, it like allows me to have that competitive spirit, but also be okay with my back.
Yeah. So Al, I'm guessing there's probably not a lot of women drag races, or is it getting more popular amongst the girls?
It's not like there's only a handful, but it's not popular. Uh-huh. So I would say if you're at the track, it's probably like 5%. Which really isn't a lot, you know, 100 racers and only 5 are female. It's very limited, but the track is so, everyone there has the same passion for it. So it's just like a big family. You don't even think of it. It's not necessarily like the business world where you're a woman and you have to really prove yourself. It's like, listen, we're all here to get in the car and just, you know, beat each other up and go down the track and see who wins.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And what's it like to win in a drag race?
Well, drag racing is actually very mathematical, as some people, you know, wouldn't assume. Yeah, so there's a lot of factors that go into it, whether it be the humidity level or the temperature of your tires versus the racetrack. And all of those factors play into what your time is going to be, and debating, you know, whether you're going to choose faster or slower, and your car has to go that exact time. So it's not really a game of who can go faster. It's really, you know, you have to depend a lot on your team, and you have to know your car, and that's how it goes. So to answer your question, to win a race, you really have to be on your game. You can't really count on your car to just go fast. So it's great because that feeling, you know that you didn't just slam the gas pedal. Your whole team, they came together to put all of those elements to be perfect for you to win.
So how do you get your car to where it's got to go if you're going all over the country, or does Dad help with that?
Truck and trailer. So the car that I drive is actually our friend. His name is Ken Moses. He's out of New Jersey, and he owns a transmission company. I race one of his cars, and then my dad has his own car that he has. So we do what we call a truck and trailer. So as you know, as it said, we are in the truck, and there's a trailer with the cars, and we have, you know, motor scooters and golf carts that we push the car with and that we go around the track with, and all of our tools and everything is in there. So it's like a big road trip pretty much every weekend.
Yes.
Tons of fun.
And do you help with the, Al, do you help with the mechanical repairs and changing tires and stuff as well?
Because so the tires, actually, it's not like NASCAR. You don't have to change them every race. So we have other things we have to do. So the cars have wheelie bars. The wheelie bar has to be at the perfect height when you go down the track. It also comes on and off. There's a nose at the tip of the car that comes on and off. Those front and ends are kind of my duties, along with filling up the gas tank properly, because, you know, it has to be perfect. Everything has to be perfect. So I help with those things. and the aesthetics of things. And then every crew member has their own job. So there's five of us. And, you know, some of them will check the engine. Some of them check the nitrous bottle. There's a whole electrical box. We all have our certain jobs. So,
yes,
I don't just get in the car and drive it. I am hands-on also. No. And, you know, I've only been doing it for 3 years, so I'm still learning.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. So you can see yourself drag racing for a long time yet?
Yes. I hope to be doing it for a very long time.
Fantastic. I, in my very much younger years, used to know how to rebuild motors and very much liked the fast cars. So I can understand the lure of drag racing, and I was really looking forward to talking to you about that today and hearing what your experience was with it. Considering that usually you think of that as a, you know, a boys thing, and I was just so excited to hear that there were girls doing these sorts of things and having fun and enjoying it, and well done you.
Thank you, and that is so cool. I love that you do that.
I used to be able to strip down a V8 motor. I used to know all the components. I'm not so sure that I would remember that now, but that's, I used to, you know, help with rebuilding the V8 motor and beefing up the carburetor and changing gaskets and, all that fun stuff. I'm not so sure I'd remember it now, but, yes, I knew immediately when I was talking to you. I thought, I remember that's like, and I was excited to know that there are girls getting interested and getting their hands dirty and getting into that sort of stuff. So the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about today is your love for Haiti. And I'd love to start with how you got involved with that and where that love of all things Haitian started.
Of course. So, actually, I would have never been involved with anything having to do with Haiti if it weren't for my back, which we keep kind of reverting. Yes. So I guess what we learn here is that if I hadn't ever broken my back, I would be nowhere that I am today. So as much as it was not fun, I am grateful that it happened because my life is great now, and I couldn't imagine it being any other way. So, I broke my back when I was a junior in high school, and I was down for a long time. I had two surgeries. I couldn't play sports, and prior to hurting myself,
sports. How did you hurt yourself, Al? Sorry.
No, it's okay. I right in a softball game.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So prior to all of that, sports was my whole life. I practiced for hours every day after school. On the weekends, we had tournaments. So I didn't really know anything else, you know, other than sports.
Yeah.
So I had my surgeries, and now at this point, I was a senior in high school, and I didn't really know, like, what I was going to do with my life. So I, you know, I just turned into your average high schooler. I was hanging out with the wrong crowd and not focusing on school and just, you know, it wasn't great, but I didn't know how to live without sports. So I just was succumbed by that kind of lifestyle. So I went to a parochial school my whole entire life from pre-K until I graduated high school. And one day I was finally like, I really need to pull it together. And I'm an only child, like you said.
Wisdom from someone so young.
I am an only child, like you said, and the wisdom comes from my parents, because my parents are the most amazing people, and they're not afraid to toughen me up, right? If I'm not making good choices, they're going to tell me because they want me to be better. So I decided that I needed to do something that was going to make me a better person. So by by chance, one of my teachers that was new as when I was a senior, he had founded an orphanage in Haiti.
Yeah.
And me and two of my friends, we said, we want to go. And he was like, no, no way. You can't do that. Like, we don't do that. You guys are only 18 years old. Yeah. Like, you can't be doing that. We were like, we are going. Like, it wasn't really a question. We wanted to go so bad. And I felt like I needed it. I didn't know why I needed it, but I needed it. So after months of convincing, signatures, all kinds of fundraisers. Me and two of my girlfriends in high school, we headed out to Haiti and we stayed at the orphanage and it was just so unbelievable. And I loved it so much that I went back again. And this time with my parents, because I needed them to feel what I was feeling. Yes. And then I led my own trips to Haiti. So I, you know, we did a whole bunch of stuff. We set up a playscape for the kids at the orphanage and we built an elderly home and we brought food to elderly men and women in the village who don't have any food at all. And it's really an amazing lifestyle. I think one misconception that a lot of people have is that when they think what is Haiti, they think what they see on the TV, which is usually Port-au-Prince, which is crazy, ton of people, ton of cars, city, very run down, houses made of tarps. And yeah, that is Haiti. But you also have the Haiti where I stayed, which is out in the mountains. If you were, you know, somewhere developed like where you are or where I am, it would probably take you an hour and a half to get from Port-au-Prince to where I was staying. And for us, it's all mountains and it takes about 7 hours to get out there by truck. So we don't have any running water. We don't have electricity. You can only buy food once a week from the traveling market. There's no grocery stores you can go to. So it's a totally different lifestyle. And I think that I wasn't spoiled growing up. I don't get me wrong. I had everything and more that I needed. But anyone who, like I said, is in a developed country, it's easy. You know, you fill your tank up with gas and then you go to the grocery store and then you watch TV at night. And and that's what we think is normal. You know, people will say, I'm bored or I wish I had this. And I needed that reality check, especially in the mindset that I was in. I needed that reality check to be somewhere where they don't even have parents, let alone running water. And they eat the same food twice a day because they don't get three meals. Yes. Sometimes they only get one. And I just fell in love with it because the most amazing part about all of it is that they are so happy and grateful for everything without having, you know, what we have.
Anything.
Their attitude on life is better. I'll go ahead and use the word better because they're just so lovely. That's like the best word that I can describe it. And it really changed my life. And so I think about it often. I would love to go back. Obviously, there's a lot of turmoil there right now, and it's unsafe. But I need a ton of friends, and it really did change my life.
Yeah. And so, Al, is it the people that draw you in, and their spirit and their happiness? Is that the thing that draws you into your work? Missionary work in Haiti?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of things. Definitely at the forefront is the people. It's just unbelievable. Yes. But also their lifestyle, as sad as some people may see it, it's also kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, we take so many things for granted. They walk everywhere. They live off of the land. They don't have canned food or drive-in, you know, burger joints or anything. And It's just simplicity. It's like beautiful simplicity. And I fell in love with that. You're not on your phone all the time. You're playing soccer out in a field, and it's just really amazing. And I fell in love with the fact that life isn't what we know it to be.
That's right. Tell me about some of the things that you've enjoyed most about your missionary work in Haiti. What's been the thing that really made you feel that you were making a difference to their lives? What's one of your favorite things about your work in Haiti?
I think that my favorite thing is, you're going to get me choked up. My favorite thing is probably that no matter who you're helping, in every single age, someone needs it, right? So I've helped babies who are 6 months old. We've brought them medicine and we've brought them food. I have taught 6 to 12-year-olds how to play wiffle ball. They didn't know that you could hit a ball with a stick instead of your foot. Girls my age, you can't communicate through language, but I've sat and they've done my hair and we've giggled, and people who have said they haven't smiled like that in a long time, and we're not even talking to each other. We're just spending genuine time. Yes. I think that's really important. And then all the way up to the elderly, there was a woman, her name was Genevieve, and she was in her 80s, and she lived in a hut, and she had no food, and she had children, and her children had their own children. And her son, they didn't have enough food to go around for all three generations. So it literally came down to the point of, do we feed grandma or do we feed the grandchildren? And he obviously chose his children, and they put her at the bottom of the mountain where they lived with a fence so she couldn't get up. So, as luck would have it, we came across her, the people, that I was with in Haiti. And every single week we brought her food and we brought her clothes and we brought her a mattress. She was sleeping on hay of a snake bed, which sounds really morbid to a lot of people, but that's life outside of our reality. It was just amazing. Yes. And when my parents came, we went to see her, and she was just in love with my dad. Mm-hmm. And to see those two worlds colliding, I have pictures, and that's what makes it worth it. Every single person, whether they're 1 year old, 25 years old, or 84 years old, they're all grateful and they all have a lot of love to go around.
So, can you tell me what's going on in Haiti at the moment that makes it unsafe for you to go back?
There's a lot of turmoil over there. Even when I was visiting, the last time that I visited was about 4.5 years ago, and it's really not safe. So there's a lot of rioting going on. They take tires off of cars and they put them in the middle of the street and light them on fire so that you can't go into their village per se. And then obviously, the law enforcement retaliate, and I've been tear gassed while I was over there, and you see bodies on the side of the road. It's real. That's the only word. Yes. It's real. And I think a lot of it stems from what's going on in their government. Everyone is not on the same page. There's not enough borders in place, but it's the most beautiful place. Like, it is, honest to God, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. So for it to be in that state, it's so sad. Yes. But gosh, if they could get it on the right track, it's like paradise for me. It's so beautiful, from the people to the land. But that's what's going on. I actually have a cousin who lived in Haiti for the past 11 years, and she just this year had to move back because it's just absolutely unsafe.
Oh, Al, do you still try and do fundraising for some of the people, or have you had to kind of withdraw from those areas as well?
No, I actually since so I've been living in South Florida for just under a year and a half now, since I've moved from
Yes.
Connecticut, and I am partnered with New Haiti, a
Yes.
Haitian
Yes.
foundation,
Yeah.
West Palm Beach. So, if you're not from here, basically it's just a town that's about 40 minutes
Yeah.
north of me. And I partnered, with James, who is the
Yes.
founder, and it's amazing. I can't physically be in Haiti, but we're
Yes.
still doing things to help the people, right? So we're raising money
Yes.
and we're putting together job opportunities for the people in Haiti
Yes.
to make it a better place. So I'm doing that, and I've always been a giver. It's something that I do. I like to give things to people, whether it be my
Yes.
friends or the people of Haiti. So I'm also
Yep.
on a board member for our local Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, and I've done things with them and
Yes.
paired up. Yeah, I still am involved to answer your question. I'm just not there physically right now.
And that's how you and I connected, was that connection with James, and James telling me about the work that he was doing in New Haiti, and that's how we connected. So, what sort of plans do you have for the future of the foundation?
Well, I would love to be there in Haiti with the
Yeah.
people. I think that something that is definitely at the top of the list is
Yes.
getting people to have jobs.
Yes.
Because obviously, being in finance, I can't
Yeah.
help but think that that's going to economically improve everything, but also it's going to create some kind of structure within the people. It's going to give them
Yeah.
responsibility. It's going to make them feel like they're needed and they're worth that job. And it's going to
Yes.
stimulate, even the towns individually.
Yeah.
It's going to stimulate the economy over there. So
Yeah.
I would like to be there physically to see it one day
Yes.
when everything settles down a little bit.
Yeah.
And I also want to connect with people who have the same vision and the same mission and the same
Yes.
heart where they're able to help and, power in numbers, right? So if we
Yes.
can find people who are similar to us and come together to do that, I think that's a beautiful vision for the
Yeah,
foundation for sure. And I'm
definitely.
super thankful for James.
Yes. So, Al, what sort of jobs do you organize for people? What sort of roles do you find that are helpful for the Haitians to get?
Sure. So there's a stadium that's being built for
Yes.
sports. We have farms that we're working
Yes.
with. We have colleges that we're working with. And my personal favorite,
Yeah.
a potential racetrack.
Yes. Yeah. In terms of education for these people, do you find that many are being encouraged to get that higher level education, or is it still out of limits for the average person to do that?
I do not think that that's encouraged. If you look at the majority, I wouldn't speak for everyone, obviously, but
Yeah.
where I was, you can't even afford to send your kid to kindergarten.
Yeah.
Then they just start with the water jugs, and then it turns into the bigger thing and the bigger thing. And then they just, they live in the village and they
Yeah.
get food and they cook and they have their family, and that's what it is in the village. There is no such thing as a job. They just
Yeah.
live, and it's
Yeah.
almost more of like a bartering system. But
Yeah.
then
Yeah.
obviously when you get into Port-au-Prince, you have more of the farming lands, which is
Yes.
scarce because of their history, right?
Yeah.
And then you have their shops. When we come in, there's a sandwich shop we always go to, and you have little
Yeah.
stuff like that,
Yeah.
barbers.
Yeah.
But I would go ahead and tell you no, it is not
Yeah.
pushed upon the people of Haiti to receive higher education.
Yeah.
Because it's just almost not feasible for them.
Yeah. 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 That's very discouraging, isn't it? Because education allows you to broaden your horizons and show you what else is out there. So that's really, and if you start by simply giving them a job, well, then that also enables them to start on that track of self-development and education and bettering their life and all the rest of it. In terms of how young girls are growing up in Haiti, what are your thoughts around the life of women in Haiti in particular?
I think that women have, let's see, a huge sense of responsibility in terms of home life. So from, you know, very, very young, they're cooking, they're learning how to cook, they're learning how to go to the market, they're learning how to take care of their siblings, they're walking 3 miles to school if they're lucky enough to go. And they're doing everything that they see their moms and their grandmas and etc. doing. So I think that they're forced because that's the only thing that they know. That's not, there's no playground that they can go play in, or there's no malls that they can go shopping. They cook and they walk and they take care of their family, and that's what life is over there. And I think it's too fast.
So do you think that you will eventually try and do some work in that area for young women in particular, since you're such a wonderful role model for young women?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was in college, actually, I went to a small business school for my undergrad, and I founded what was called the Institute for Women's Leadership, because the college that I went to was previously an all-male boarding school. So even by the time I got there, it was still about a 65-35% ratio men to women.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't go out there and call myself a strong feminist. I just believe everyone's equal. And, you know, I like to run with the big boys. Obviously, I'm over here racing. But I do think that attention needs to be brought to it. Not forced on anyone, but just a realization thing more so. So I enjoyed thoroughly making it more aware about women in business, even when I was just in college. And, you know, I graduated 3 years ago, which is crazy to think about, but the foundation is still going strong. So if I could start doing something on that scale, and then we're able to bring it to a larger scale in Haiti, I the importance in that is just incomparable. It would be amazing for sure. Because it's not even like they're not allowed. They don't know anything else. They need to realize their work. That's where it starts.
And you would be the perfect role model to do some of that stuff, Al, particularly with your history of visiting the country and all the things that you do. You would be a wonderful role model for young women to look up to and say, well, if she can do it, then I can do it, and so on and so forth. So your work in Haiti is part of what you're passionate about. Your everyday, you're obviously very good at your financial work. Tell me, I'd love to know more about your little goddaughter, because in reading about you and what you did, she was kind of pivotal in changing some of your thoughts around focusing on other people versus yourself.
So I was... I was probably 15 years old when I became a godmother, which, you know, that's pretty young, a 15-year-old. That was, you know, I was in high school, and I'm an only child, like I said, so I never had the experience growing up of taking care of a younger sibling or anything of that sort. So I was like a godmother. And like I said, I went to parochial school and I go to church every Sunday. But still, I was 15. I was, you know, not the greatest person in the world. We already talked about that. So I couldn't believe it. So I said to myself, like, first of all, there has to be a reason that I'm chosen for this role. And I am a true believer that everything happens when it's supposed to. And 15 years old, I was like, all right, I have this human being, literally a person. Yes. And now if anything happens, I'm responsible for her. And in the meantime, it's my responsibility to teach her the ways of being a good person and how to be herself. Yes. And that's a big role to play, especially when you're 15 years old. So she definitely changed my life. She is almost 10, which is so crazy to think about. But she, you know, she's like my little best friend now. And if you talk to her, she's intelligent, she's smart, she's a good person, she's empathetic, she is a beautiful, beautiful human being, and and you know, she's amazing. But it's crazy to think that I was a part of that. But I think, like I said, I'll go back to it all happens how it's supposed to, because I'm there for her, but as much as I help her with anything, she has molded me more so than anything else.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can, it's obvious that she has taught you lots, and that you will have a lifelong connection, because you've been in her life for so long, and she's going to be entering those tumultuous teenage years in not too long a time, and that's when you're expertise and will be so important to her, because often teenagers get to that rocky time of life and they don't have someone that they can reach out and talk to who loves them unconditionally, and you're going to be that person for her. And it's a wonderful thing. Eventually you will probably go ahead and get married and have kids of your own, but having had this experience and being part of her life and such a positive part of her life will stand you in good stead for whenever and if ever you decide to have children of your own. So how often do you see her?
I see her every time that I'm home. So, you know, I was just home this past weekend for my race, and I saw her then, and I FaceTime with her a couple of times a week, and, you know, she'll get on her mom. Her mom is my cousin, so she'll get on her mom's phone, and I'll text her. You know, she's old enough now where I can text her and everything. And you're absolutely right. Those teenage years, I look back 10 years ago when I became a godmother, but I was 15 years old, and I, you know, it's not easy being a teenager at all. You know, you are finding out who you are. Yeah, you find out who you are, and you have a lot of choices to make that make, you know, huge decisions, you know, that could change your life. And I think it is good that I was so young when I became a godmother. Her name is Brooklyn, and I tell her, like,
which is Brooklyn, a lovely name.
Yeah, so cute. And I tell her, like, you know, we'll talk, and I mean, she's going to be 10, but it's like I can almost relate to some of the stuff she's saying, because it wasn't too long ago for me. Yeah. So being only 15 years her elder, it's nice that I can kind of look back and be like, you know, I know that feeling, and be there for her. Yeah. You know, she has two amazing parents, and be there for her on that outlet in a way.
Yeah. You can never, as a teenager in particular, you can never have too many contacts or people to reach out to. And even if you have great relationships with your mum and dad, the ability to reach out to someone other than mum and dad is always a good thing. So has Brooklyn got brothers, sisters?
Yes, Brooklyn has a younger sister, Amaya,
Oh,
and
cool.
my mom is actually Amaya's godmother. So,
Oh, what a beautiful name, Amaya.
yes,
Amaya?
Amaya and Brooklyn.
Beautiful names, beautiful names. So, I think that it has just been a wonderful privilege to talk to someone so young who has done and achieved so much. And I'm really feeling very privileged to have talked to a young woman on a mission. Normally, I get to talk to kind of the older age group, so I'm feeling really blessed that you agreed to come and talk on Radio Tony and tell the world about what you've been doing and how you've been doing it. We don't hear from young women often enough. We don't hear the wonderful things that they do and that they achieve. And again, I'm just so grateful that you have taken the time to come on the show today, Al. It's wonderful to listen about your work in Haiti and your plans for the future of Haiti. And I expect to see big things from you in the future.
Oh, Tony, thank you so much for having me. I feel like the honor is mine being here and for you taking the time out to have me as your guest and share what I have to share and just speak with you. It was really amazing.
Oh, I would love to be speaking to more 25-year-olds that have the wealth of experience, and the beauty of soul that you have. We need to see our bright young women doing amazing things, and we need to celebrate them. And so, if I'm any part in helping celebrate this gorgeous, beautiful woman sitting opposite me, then absolutely I'm on board for that. It is just delightful that there are young women performing and doing wonderful things that will lead the next generation. So I think of you as a leader for the next generation of women. And again, we need to hear more stories about drag racing financial planners who do missionary work in Haiti. What a wonderful combination, and what a wonderful thing to celebrate.
Yes. Well, thank you, Tony. You are an amazing person, and I am grateful.
I'm really feeling quite blessed that I connected with sorry, mind blank. That happens with live TV and old brains. I'm so glad I connected with James and he introduced me to you when he said you were this amazing girl doing this wonderful work in Haiti and passionate about doing the work in Haiti. And then I started reading your bio and I thought, oh, I can't wait to talk to you. I hope it's okay that she talks to this old bird on radio. And it's been just a pleasure. And I know that one day your ultimate aim is to have a non-profit organization of your own. And I am absolutely sure that you will achieve that. We're down to our last 60 seconds, so I'm going to let you go now. Al, thank you so much for being on Radio Tony, for answering so beautifully and so honestly, and sharing your story with the world.
Thank you, Tony. All my love, and I hope to stay in touch.
Absolutely, we will stay in touch. And that's all for me now on Radio Tony Everyday Business. We are going to pop on to the outro, and I will see you live next week on Radio Tony Everyday Business. Thank you, darling Al. Bye for now, everyone. Thank you for watching and listening to Tony TV. For more inspirational stories, join us next week. Bye for now.